lovely lady's going to come out and join us now, Louie.
Yeah?
You know, last time she was here, I think I may have embarrassed her by listing all of her beauty and fashion accomplishments in my introduction. I went a little overboard, but it's hard not to do that when you like people.
Yes.
Now, I won't do that today. I'll simply say, greet the lovely and talented Dina Merrill. Pretty. You look like a movie star.
I do.
Doesn't she look like a movie star?
Yeah, I bet she does.
It's nice to be back here again.
Are you going to go with that new midi length that's going to hit you right there?
You know, I hate it.
Good.
I really hate it. I think somebody else has it too. I think it's terrible.
Oh, it's such a drastic change.
And I hope maybe those nice ladies that are sitting out there, if they help me, you know, we can fight this thing. We don't have to wear our skirts like that.
No.
We can keep them the way they are. And the kids can wear their short ones, and we can wear our medium ones, and everybody can do their own thing and be happy.
But you said...
Fair enough, yeah.
But you keep reading things. You're very fashion conscious, I can... You know, I know by the way you dress.
Yeah, but I like to wear things that are becoming. You know, I'm not going to go around looking like a gypsy because a lot of people do.
Good for you. That's my... Last time you were here, you were on your way to Japan to do a movie. How did it go?
Oh, it went fine. We had a fascinating time. It was a Japanese production company. There were only three Americans in the company.
That's interesting. Who were the three Americans?
Yourself? Dale Robertson. There were lots of Robertsons over there. Dale Robertson and Frank Sinatra Jr. and myself. And we had a Japanese producer, a Japanese director, all Japanese crew, and none of us spoke very much English.
Were they good?
They were. They were fabulous. We had an incredible cameraman that was just marvelous. Young man. Mm. I never saw such beautiful photography in my life as that young fellow did. Just fabulous. Oh, they're brilliant.
You know, some things that I've always wanted to get a whole collection of American movies or television shows with the dialogue of other countries dubbed. Have you ever heard yourself in Japanese?
Well, I want to tell you a funny story.
That's so funny.
When we were over there, Clifford had heard about these marvelous baths and massage and everything, you know. And so, of course, he had to go to one of these. So he went, and he made the appointment. We had some friends with us, and two guys went. Bill Harback was producer of
Hollywood
Palace. Oh, yes,
sure.
I'm sure he's a friend
of
yours.
Yes.
So they went. And they made the appointment and everything, and they got to this place, and they were feeling like, you know, they were really off on their own, and they were going to have all these lovely Japanese girls massaging them. They're going to take baths and be scrubbed and all this, you know. And they're waiting there, and they're sitting in the reception room, and there's a TV thing over there. And suddenly Cliff pokes Bill, and he said, "I don't believe it." He said, "I don't believe it." And there I am, spouting Japanese at him. And it was a rerun of a series, and they dubbed it in Japanese, and here I was. He said, "I can't get away from her, not even in Japan."
Yeah.
I think it's so funny when you...
Isn't that lovely?
I had a beautiful experience right after the war. You know, we went over to Japan to play concerts in 1953, my first time. And I had a cute little old Japanese boy as my secretary, and my whole tour all through Japan and everything. So it comes a time where we got to come back home, and in the dressing room, just he and I talking. I said, "Well, you know, I'm going home tomorrow." He said, "Alabama?" I said, "Hell." Oh, man.
I think the funniest thing that you can see is somebody like a John Wayne, a very virile guy in Japanese. His voice comes out, you know, and he's saying they went that away or something. I think
that's
hysterical.
That was the only thing I didn't. Cliff called me, you know, when this happened, and he's
Cliff,
just laughing.
By the way, is Dina's husband, Cliff Robertson. Always gets a hum.
Yeah. Well, he called me to tell me this funny thing, you see, that happened. He said, "Now turn on Channel 8, because I was in the hotel." So I turned it on. And the only thing I really hated about it was the Japanese girl who dubbed me and had a very high voice up here.
You had no control over
no.
that.
No.
Right? Oh, that'd be terrible.
And I didn't like myself talking up here.
If I may say so, I was so impressed with what your husband said at the Academy Awards. And I know it wasn't a part of the show because he apologized
no,
before he said it.
It wasn't at all. Well, I don't know whether you know who those people were. Selig Seligman was the producer of the film, and a wonderful man, and made it possible to happen, because no one would do that film. You know, Cliff had it for a long time, and Selig did it, and it was really the high point of his career, and he was a hero to his kids, because he'd done movies before, but they'd never been like Charlie. They'd never been really marvelous pictures. And suddenly his teenage son said, "Gee, Dad, you made Charlie." Mm-hmm. You know, and it really did something for him, and in his own life, as well as being a financial success and everything. But he had a heart attack and he died. He was only, I think, 50 or 51. Johnny, who was mentioned, was a young boy, a mentally retarded boy, who worked with Cliff through the whole picture and before, and was with him, became his very good friend. And he was killed in an automobile accident. He was only about 24, 25 years old. And Ruth White played the marvelous landlady, the lovely Irish landlady in the picture. So he felt very strongly that all these people in 1 year leaving, that something should be said, you know, to honor them.
What was Gregory Peck's reaction to that?
Oh, he was delighted. He really was.
That's
he was
nice,
very moved by it. Yeah.
That must be, were you there?
Yes,
night?
I was. I was sitting in the audience, cheering, you know.
Oh, that must be an exciting
yeah,
evening.
Yeah, it is. It really is an exciting evening.
Are you still busy with your cosmetic line?
Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, I've just been on a series of one-night stands around the country.
Oh, I see.
Introducing
this Louis
thing.
React to that.
You see? Well, this is a new experience for me, Louis. I've never done this before.
Well, I did 54.
Oh, boy.
54 years of it.
Well, 54 years of one-nighters.
It's been very, very interesting. But we've traveled in style. We've had the Pfizer Drug Company jet. And
that's
we've been
nice.
Moving around from city to city. We couldn't have done it without it.
Do you like playing the business lady?
Well, I'm not really a business lady, you know. I'm really not. But I'm learning a lot about it, very interesting.
What kind of questions do the women ask you? I'm curious, because they all want everybody.
Well,
I think I remember a couple of things happening on this show where I think it was Arlene Dahl who just casually mentioned, it wasn't in the nature of a plug or anything, she has skin. It's just not, it's unreal, you know. And she said, what kind of cold cream she used.
Mm-hmm.
And the department store in Cleveland called me up after the show and said, what did that lady say? She said, we're sold out of that cold cream and we can't, and the women are in here all asking for the, you know, want some of the cold cream, you know. So it's amazing, the power of television.
Yeah.
What are some
really,
of the things that they
really
say
is.
To you? Ask about
well, they some of them ask about themselves and some about their daughters. We had some ladies in there who had teenage daughters who had skin problems or who used too much makeup or didn't know how to apply makeup. All that kind of thing, you know. But
would you, lovely lady, consider taking some questions from our audience? We have a lot of ladies out there, I'm sure, would like to ask questions.
Sure, of course I would.
Could you excuse us, Louis, would you?
Okay, baby.
This is not your line. You know,
that flashes,
like I thought of to ask what color that was going to be.
Okay, who would like to ask the first question? Raise your hands if you will, please.
They all look so good out there.
I see a hand right in the back. Would you stand up, please?
As you get older, should you ease up on makeup?
I think so. Very definitely. I think when you're 20, that you can do anything and get away with it. You know what I mean? You can wear marvelous far-out things and crazy eyes and all that kind of thing. But I think as you get older, it begins to look hard. And I think you should cut down on the amount of makeup you use. Everything should be softer. Your hair color, if you have tinted your hair a little bit, it should be a softer shade.
Very good. Next question. Yes, miss.
What do you think of false eyelashes?
Oh, wait, I'm not sure that was heard. We heard it, but... What do you think of false eyelashes?
Well, I happen to love them. I think there are many different kinds of eyelashes on the market today. I like them to look pretty natural, but I do love them. I think they help your eyes enormously. They really open them up. On the other hand, my husband hates them. So there, you know, I have a dilemma. I don't wear them very much during the day or when I'm home. I do wear them for work. I have them on now. I wear them when I go out at night. No, I never did. But, well, no, I take that back. I did. There was a new kind that came out once some years ago where you put them on underneath your own eyelashes instead of on top of them. And I didn't know how to do that very well. And I tried, you know, and then I went to a play that night, and suddenly I saw this thing. I went, dang, oh dear, what am I going to do? So I quickly disappeared into the ladies' room with my pot of glue and patched it up, but I had to do it above. I never could get it back underneath.
I've seen that happen to girls on the show where you'd be talking to them, and you see one spring up, and then you say, and you don't want to say, your eyelash is coming. You keep staring at it. You know how when something's wrong and you want to be casual and you find yourself doing this? It's going to fall off while we get finished. Who has another question, please? Yes, right there. That lady right there.
When you have a low-cut dress on and you have your makeup down low, I have a problem with the makeup getting all over the clothes. Is there any remedy to cover this makeup and keep it from getting on your clothing?
Well, yes. When in the studios, when we...
wait a minute. Somebody threw a line. Somebody threw a line over there. What did the fella say? What did he say? They got a good show going on over here. The lady said, I don't think the question was heard. She said, when you wear a low-cut dress and you wear the makeup on your body, how do you keep it from getting all over the dress?
Well, in the studios, we have that problem because we have to wear body makeup for color film, particularly. And after they apply it, it's usually a pancake makeup, they kind of buff it down a little bit with a cloth. And if you rub it, take your hand and just rub it, it will take a lot of that powdery surface off it, and you'll find it won't come off nearly as much on your clothes.
Thank you, Dina Merrill. I think we're out of time on the questions. Thank you. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, here is my co-host Louis Armstrong and Lamb Chops.
Lamb Chops.
Excuse me. How do you?
Weston.
How do you know my name? You know my name.
Well, I've been knowing you for a long time now. Is your boy a girl?
I'm a girl. Why do people always ask that? Look at these eyelashes.
Well, I mean, they
and they don't come
the
off
kind of
either. Ha ha ha, Dina Merrill.
What you chewing? You eat the.
Excuse
look
me.
Look here, Lamb Chops.
Louis?
How about us singing a little ditty there?
I don't know any ditties. I know a couple of songs.
Okay.
Yeah? Let's
I'm going to lead off now, yeah?
You're going to lead off?
Okay. Well,
okay.
How can I sing if you're going to be working like.
Am I making you nervous?
Come on,
it's okay for you to move your lips, Louie. Just go ahead and sing.
Okay.
Yes?
Well, you move yours that way, because you'll have to grab something. And when I get to blow that horn, I'm going to have but one lip left there. Come on, Lamb, you ready?
I'm ready, Louie.
Okay.
Okay.
We are poor little lambs.
Is that what you are?
Who have lost our way.
Are you the black sheep I always heard about?
Yeah. Watch it, baby.
Listen to that, Louie.
We are little black sheep.
Yeah, that's all we are.
Who and we have gone
astray.
Let me riff this one. Bapa do bapa, that is bad, 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 bad.
Now a black sheep.
Listen, baby. Let me see you do that. You can't do that.
No, you know how I go? Top that,
Satchel. Is that ripping or what? Gentlemen, songsters, off on the spree. Doomed from here to eternity.
You got a lot of teeth.
Say,
I said you got it.
Lord have mercy on such a thing.
Let's give him a big end.
Bad, bad, bad.
Ah, sing it, baby.
Bad, bad,
bad. Oh, bumpy, 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 bumpy,
bumpy, bumpy, bumpy.
Hey, you sing a song funny, Satchel.
You know what, Lamb Chap, you got to do something to keep up with, Lamb.
Oh, you're way ahead of the game.
You know, Dina said something incredible when you were working. She said, is she ad-libbing all this? I said, with Louie, how else? You know he is going to stick right to it.
I don't know how you do that. Bob, Bob, bee, boo, bee, Bob.
You get hungry, you do it.
Funny.
What have you been doing, Sherry, since I last saw you?
You know, I have a series on the BBC in London.
Do you?
So I've been commuting to London. I did a show for the Queen.
Oh, that's
don't cool. Say, don't say which was. Queen. I
no,
beg
no,
of
no,
you.
No, I won't say it.
Oh, it was
that's
fun.
That's exciting, isn't it?
Oh, it was lovely. I had a very tough time, though. I had written and worked and shaped a routine that I loved. Lamb Chop was drunk. And here she was, and she was saying, hey, you don't happen to have a drink on you, do you? And I'm on stage during rehearsal, and I start my routine, and she starts, and she says, you don't have... And I say, Lamb Chop, you know I don't drink in front of an audience. And she says, is that an audience? She said, ah. And she said to the audience, you don't happen to have a drink on you, do you? And I said, how can you do this in front of the Queen? And she says, the Queen, hey, she doesn't happen to have a drink on you, does she? And then,
You weren't able to do it?
Well... They came back to me. Such nice stuff. Lamb Chop kept saying, gee, the Queen is taller than she looks from a postage stamp. And they came back afterward, after the rehearsal, and they said, cut the royal references. And I had to go back to my hotel room, my lonely hotel room, and rewrite the whole thing. Oh. It went very well. It was really exciting. I forgot to curtsy. Forgot to curtsy.
When you met her.
Ginger Rogers was on the bill. It was such a bill. Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass.
Whoa.
And Tom Jones and Harry Secombe, who's a wonderful English performer.
Yes, sings like a bird, too,
oh,
doesn't he?
Gorgeous, gorgeous. Huh? And Ginger and the entire cast of Mame. So Ginger came over to me before the show, and she's very beautiful. My goodness. And she was like a little girl. How are you going to show me your curtsy? So there in the corner, we practiced curtsying.
Came the show, she was up the lawn. You should have seen her curtsy make you sick. She curtsied like she was the queen. And then it came my turn, and I looked at this lady, and all I could think of was that 1,000 years ago, this lady's ancestors built Windsor Castle. And I was so stupefied by the history involved that I stood there and I said, how do you do? Didn't call her your majesty.
How do you do?
No!
You're as bad as I am. You know what I said to the president when I met him, Johnson? I said, you better get some rest. My wife said, we're walking away, my wife said, you better get some rest in the party. She looks very tired, but it came right out. I was worried.
Goodness.
Isn't that awful? You know, whenever I hear anybody say they met the queen, I've said this before, got to repeat it. Alan King did a command performance and was going to meet the queen.
They only booked him because of his name. That's it.
And he went out. And they had he was very nervous, and he and this other fellow had a couple of drinks, see? So it came time, and she said, good evening, Mr. King. And he said, good evening, Mrs. Queen. Now, you can't hardly top that, can you?
Is
your show going to be seen here, the one you're doing?
No, it's a series strictly for the BBC. We just had a show optioned here. Hopefully, I'll be on within the year.
Very nice. Yes. We'll be happy about that.
Thank you.
What kind of a show is it that you're doing over there?
It's 6 o'clock Sunday nights. It's a one-woman variety show.
You sing and you dance?
Yeah, everything. It's very nice. I like it. And in England, nobody, they give you this little pocket of time and you do what you want to do with it. And it's really very relaxed. And if you have 4 minutes over, they let you run over.
If you have
3 minutes under, they let you run under.
I think that's great.
And when I run over, I then run home, turn on the set, and all night long on the BBC, you hear them saying, all programming will be 3 minutes later than scheduled.
Scheduled. That's a classy word, isn't it? You know, you mentioned Ginger Rogers a moment ago, and I know from having read about her that she is your number one fan, Louis Armstrong.
Yeah,
do you know that? Got every record you've ever made. Every record the man has ever made.
Yes.
How did it feel working with Louis Armstrong, Sherry? Tell the truth.
I was reminded, in fact, I told Artie Shaw, who's sitting upstairs, that
I
was
down here shortly too.
Yeah, oh, nice man. I was telling him that I had read a book called Actors Talk About Acting. And Bert Lahr said in it, the first thing I do when I come out on a stage is for the first 10 minutes I try to make the audience love me. And of course, when you come out on a stage, the first thing the audience does is love you. And
well, I feel the same way about you.
Thank you. That's very nice.
Been picking up on you a long time.
Thank you.
Very
what have you been doing to keep busy outside of show business? Because you're the busiest lady I know.
I'm a brownie leader. I got 22 brownie scouts. Someday I'm going to learn the brownie oath. Nope, doubt about it.
Yeah. How did you get involved with the brownie?
I'm a 7-year-old.
Oh,
somebody's got to do it.
I didn't know she was that old.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. It's great fun. I have 22 little girls, and you discover that you really feel a function because little girls today don't know how to cook. They don't know how to sew. And so we've done things like 2-3 weeks ago, we gave them a dinner. They gave themselves a dinner party where they did everything, including grinding the meat.
That's great.
Because, you know, you say to little 7-year-olds, now, where does hamburger come from? And they say, ham. And, you know, boom, we got to start at the beginning.
Ham.
Huh? Ham.
Have kids changed much in the last 10 years?
Tremendously. And scouting, God bless it, has adjusted. Scouting is not what it used to be. Semaphore flags, and you know the story about the Boy Scout Jamboree, and there are 20,000 Boy Scouts, and somebody blows a trumpet, and two boys run out from opposite sides, and they come together in the middle, and then they go apart, and one boy takes out semaphore flags, and he's signaling, and the other boy takes out a pad and a pencil, and he's writing down the message that the other one is signaling, and a trumpet blows again, and then they run back to the center and up to the podium, and a man comes up to them with a microphone, and the boy who's been taking down the message takes his pad and reads the message. He proudly reads, Gelcom. Well, it's not like that anymore. Scouts now is really into things like homemaking and human relations, bringing together people from different levels of society. In fact, Girl Scouts are now looking for adults who don't have children, who feel that they can contribute.
That's the same lady who said shellac to make it, I think. They got a show going on in that side of the studio.
I wonder what I said.
Do little girls today, do they need a structured kind of program?
Oh, terribly, because kids form their own clubs, and their own clubs often make no sense at all. My little girl came up to me and she said, Mommy, I have just started a spy ring. I said, no. She said, yes. She said, I'm a secret agent, and my number is 796. I said, Really? She said, yes. She said, the more important you are, the higher your number. I said, are you the only one in the club? She said, no, Janet's in it, too. I said, what's Janet's number? And she said, 4.
That's marvelous.
Sure. And, you know, the basis of scouting is democracy. And they are exposed to people of all kinds, to old people and young people, people from all the because there's a lot of mixing of all the scouts in Los Angeles, all of the scouts of, because it's an international organization.
Do they, you know the merit badges and what you have to do to get them and all?
Yes.
You know the old story about helping the little old lady across the street and who didn't really want to go?
You did it?
I took a little lady across the street. Didn't want to cross the street, young man. I practically carried her bodily to get the bag. You know, I did that.
Oh, that's
I swear to you.
Funny.
How's your husband?
He's very well, thank you.
Does he make the trips to England with you?
Sometimes. He does some business in England. Jeremy, my husband, is a book publisher, and he is... the distributor for the Kemp's Directory, which is a directory of theater and theater people in England.
You like England?
I would move there 6 months ago if it weren't for the fact that my husband's business is basically in Los Angeles.
Everybody.
How long do you have to spend there?
I go over pregnant with shows. I learn 39 songs and hundreds of pages of script, and I go over there and you push my navel and out come 6 songs, you know. And I do 6 to 10 shows at a blow. Mm-hmm.
And how long, how much time are you there for that many shows?
I do 2 shows a day.
Really?
Yes.
They are incredible over there. I mean, the techniques and the sound and everything is marvelous.
Very nice.
Just very, very good.
Yes, I adore it.
We're going to be right back with the Four Tops in just a moment. Stay with us, okay?
Hey, it's great to have you back.
It's a pleasure
to
be back.
It really is. And you know something I noticed, because I'm very conscious of the colors, those are great outfits. And then you were on, and Dina Merrill walked by, and she's got a dress on. It's very
lavender,
much,
right,
yeah.
Right. Beautiful.
Purple. Those are really
we
nice.
Thought we'd wear something nice and subdued.
That's one of your
something very conservative.
That's one of your conservative.
Right.
15 years together, guys.
Yes,
what's
yes.
What's the secret?
We just don't bother each other.
No, really.
No,
do you?
It's
do
love.
You
it's we love. We grew up together. We've just been friends, and we just try to keep it that way. And we just don't get in each
but
other's way.
You all going like separate directions?
No, we stay together.
We stay
all
together
time.
Most of the time.
Yeah. Most of the time, we live right around the corner from each other, and
that's
we see each other every day.
Together.
Through necessity, though.
I may have asked you this before, but it bears repeating. The name. Who decided upon that name, the Four Tops?
Well, Maurice King.
Maurice King, he's a musical director for Marvin Gaye in Detroit.
And Motown.
Yes, and this was years ago. We were going to Montreal and we needed a name. And he said, we were riding around in his car and he said, what can we use? He said, you guys are tops, so the Four Tops. So he said, beautiful.
When you're not busy, when you guys are just relaxing, what kind of music do you listen to?
You like all types of music.
All types of
all
music?
All types, really. Yeah. You like jazz, rock, underground. It's according to where you feel, how you wake up that day.
I know you're young guys and everything, but what does it do to you when you walk on the same show with a man like Louis?
It's like one of the greatest honors in the world.
He's a legend.
You know,
he's
anywhere in his area.
Beautiful. What have you been up to lately? You've been doing a lot of traveling?
Yes, well, we've been doing concert dates. We're getting ready to go back to England again to do a Talk of the Town. Is that it?
Yeah. Talk of the Town in England. Yeah, well, that's a nice club. Very nice.
We're going to Australia in June, so we'll be traveling this year.
That's a lot of traveling. How about doing
the new record for us?
The new record.
Right.
Okay.
It'll be a pleasure.
We've got to get that in there.
Why not?
Many a tear has to fall,
but it's all in the game.
All in the wonderful game
that we know, that we know is love.
You had words with him. And your future looking dim, but these days your heart will rise above.
Oh, yeah. In a while he won't come.
Oh yeah.
So in the game,
soon he'll be there at your side.
Sweet bouquet.
With a sweet bouquet. Then he'll kiss.
Yes, he will. Oh, yes, he will now.
And caress
yes,
your
wings. Oh, yes, he will.
And your heart will fly away. Come on and sing it now.
Oh, yeah.
Then he'll kiss.
Yes, he will.
Your
oh, yes, he will now.
And caress
yes,
your wings.
Oh, yes, he will.
And your heart will fly away.
Your heart's gonna fly away.
It's all in the game called love.
All in the game called love.
It's all in the game called love.
Yeah.
Louis, the last time this man was on our show, he told me that he had had a lamp made out of his clarinet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He actually hasn't played in a lot of years, but before that happened, believe me, he's one of the great band leaders
You're
of our time.
You're telling me.
It's been over 20 years since he's played the clarinet, but he's still very much in show business. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Artie Shaw.
Neurotic man, that sweet neurotic man that you just introduced.
Neurotic?
Yes, first thing he said to me when he met me was, "You're hiding behind your puppet." Now, I think making a lamp out of your clarinet is a sin.
I've been hiding behind it for years.
That's how I know. It takes one to know one.
You weren't kidding about the lamp.
It takes a hider to hide her to find out, you know. Anyway, why is that? That's not so strange. And it's not neurotic, that's for sure.
To make a lamp out of your clarinet, I think that's denying a whole bunch of years.
I don't know why. Why does this matter?
Did you really make a lamp out of it?
No, but I will.
You said we're all neurotic.
Are we really? Well, I mean, I think in a society like ours, it would be awfully hard to be, quote, normal, wouldn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you'd have to be neurotic.
What is normal?
You have to be neurotic to be normal, is what I mean.
Oh, I see.
You'd have to be a little nuts to be very happy with what's happening today.
Did you two ever work together?
No, we did a little drawing together.
Louis was a fellow that I made a pilgrimage to see a long time ago when I was quite young, when he was at the Savoy Ballroom.
Yeah.
And he was the man to listen to. I assure you, nobody knew it except a few of us musicians. And he was making records at that time with the Hot Five and... as I remember, they were called, weren't they, Louis? Race records.
Oh, quite naturally.
They weren't sold on the normal market.